The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Well, hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to send some emails to the program, you can do that this week by sending it to td@kpcg.fm. About 2 weeks ago, you might remember us talking about basically a trumpet.com relaunch. And in that first week, there's not a lot of difference as far as the overall design of the website. But if you've been visiting it the last 2 weeks, you'll notice some pretty significant differences. But in that first week, we had our best day of traffic, or rather our best week of traffic since Brexit last June. So I think the best week in 7 months. And last week, we ended up just barely behind the week before by a few thousand page views. So the traffic did immediately pick up when we made these changes. And last week, we were able to sustain that. As we go forward, though, we want to surpass these traffic levels from the past couple of weeks and continue on with an upward trend. If you haven't yet visited the new and improved trumpet.com, make sure that you, thetrumpet.com, make sure that you go and visit the website, some of the articles that we've had posted there over the last few days. This one here from Friday, Russia and China developing meaner weapons of war and more will to use them. I think Jeremiah Jacques wrote this, and it fit right in with the, I think it was the last program that I taped for television over here before I took off with my wife for a few days. But he says here, Mr. Jacques, Russia and China are developing more advanced weapons of war, improving existing arms systems, and possibly practicing for preemptive strikes on American targets. It says several reports have emerged in recent days showing that the military capacity and resolve of these Asian giants is on the rise. And he says, taken together, these developments paint a picture of a world primed for conflict. That's what we see in the world today. As we look at it all over the world, we see a world that's primed for conflict. And we'll come back to this more, this great Asian superpower. Looking at a prophecy in Revelation 9, we touched on it in the TV program that I taped last week, as I said. And there's a lot in the Russia and China in Prophecy booklet that really does give us a great framework to look at with respect to Bible prophecy. But as for this little article that I quoted from, this was at thetrumpet.com. It's already, because we're producing so much content, it's already been pushed way down on the timeline. But go to thetrumpet.com and look for Russia and China developing meaner weapons of war and more will to use them. There was another piece on Friday. Germany's taking back gold from the United States. You might remember us talking about this or writing about it many, many years ago. It said in the article, the Bundesbank announced yesterday, so the other a few days ago anyway, that it had repatriated 300 tons of gold stored in New York City ahead of schedule. And basically, the article points out how that the Germans, initially they estimated that it would take 7 years to retrieve all of this gold. And as it happens, they ended up 4 years ahead of schedule. So they've secured their gold, and as we've been covering over and again, Germany's on the march. Germany's looking to build a military. There's talk of Germany building nuclear bombs. I'll come to that in just a second as well. There's a feature, this was in the Trumpet magazine, and it's featured today at the website. You can see it there near the top of the page. Trump tells Germany, take control. President Trump, he's telling Germany, look, you take control. And Germany, there's lots and lots of leaders in Germany who are quite happy to do that. Go to the website if you haven't seen it today yet. There's a great analysis piece there. Trump telling Germany to take control. We just posted one a moment ago. Who will Mexico trade with? Now, you know about the shaky relationship now between the United States and Mexico. And so who do you suppose Mexico will turn to, as so many other nations are turning away from the United States? And they're going to band together in one massive trade alliance that leaves the United States and Britain on the outside, frozen out of this now forming trade alliance that really is not just one or two nations. It's pretty much the rest of the world ganging up on the United States and Britain, and little Judah as well. But back to this piece, Trump tells Germany, you take control, take control. And then look at some of the statements, look at some of the articles coming out of Germany. Another piece that we had at thetrumpet.com on Friday, Polish politician calls for an EU nuclear superpower. Here's an EU politician from Poland calling on Germany to take the lead. Richard Palmer wrote, Poland would welcome an EU nuclear superpower. Jarosław Kaczynski, head of Poland's ruling party, told the Frankfurter Allgemeine Zeitung in an interview published February 7th. Kaczynski also called for the EU to be prepared for huge expenditures on its military. He's one of now many voices speaking up in Europe, saying that the European Union needs to spend a huge amount of money on its military. It says Kaczynski made his remarks to the German newspaper before meeting with German Chancellor Angela Merkel. That got quite a bit of coverage as well. I'll refer to a couple of other articles here in just a second. But Richard Palmer wrote on Friday, remarks, or rather Reuters noted that Kaczynski wields no government post but is seen as the main power broker in Poland. Reuters also noted that Mr. Kaczynski appears to be changing his views on Germany. He has in the past been deeply distrustful of Germany, and you can understand why if you know anything about recent history. Deeply distrustful of Germany, but now appears to view Germany more positively. I mean, there's dramatic changes, and they're happening fast. According to the Telegraph, it is thought that Kaczynski may have pressed Merkel on the issue of nuclear weapons during the meeting. How about that? The main power broker in Poland pressing the leader of Germany on the issue of building nuclear weapons. It says, in general, Poland wants the EU to give more power to the member states, but when it comes to the military, it wants the EU to be a superpower that can help defend Poland against Russia. And so this comes at a time when people in Europe and Germans themselves, where they're talking about whether or not they need their own nuclear umbrella, since they can't rely on the United States anymore to defend them. Donald Trump's not going to defend them, they're saying. And so Europe is going it alone. They've had the political union now for quite a number of years, decades, in fact. They've had the economic union for a couple of decades, almost. And now comes the military union. Just exactly the way Herbert Armstrong said that it would come together. It says here, this is the final bit from Richard Palmer's piece on Friday. It says here, yesterday, Bill, Germany's most popular newspaper, asked, is it time for Germany to become a nuclear power? That's one of the leading German publications. Is it time for Germany to become a nuclear power? And Richard Palmer, if you didn't hear it on Friday, he was on Trumpet Hour talking about just the speed of events, how they're the prophetic events and how that they're accelerating. He said on the program Friday that, you know, 5-10 years ago, there was a lot of talk in Germany about getting rid of the American nukes that were on their soil. Oh, well, it's a time of peace. In this age of globalism, we don't need nukes to be sitting on our soil. That was just 5-10 years ago. And then you look at all of the earth-shaking events from 2016. and one or two people in November after the election in the United States beginning to wonder, well, should we be preparing for a time when we're going to need our own nukes? As Richard was saying on Friday, you know, when the first person brought that up, or the first commentator brought that up, or the first German publication brought that up. I mean, that in itself was huge news. Here is the Frankfurter Allgemeine Zeitung talking about Germany needing a nuclear weapon. And as Richard brought out, I mean, that was November. Now we're in February. And you've got articles coming out all the time talking about a Germany with nuclear weapons. And it's discussed now with such frequency that, well, it's not even that big of news anymore. Well, you know, if you've been following the trumpet for very long, you know that we've been warning of so many of these events. I mean, even that Polish politician urging Germany to step up and to take the lead militarily for fear of Russia. And we've long warned that fear of Russia is what would push Europe to unite, to draw together. There's been more, as I say, quite a few reports following those meetings last week between Poland and Germany. The Irish Times, in a piece that was handed to me this morning, it says alliances are changing, loyalties shifting, and Warsaw's welcome to Merkel this week suggests that, well, it mentions this political organization or party, I don't know the name, and its leader, it says Jaroslaw Kaczynski, see a strategic benefit in constructive engagement with its EU partners. And then over at European Council on Foreign Relations, it says here in a headline, pariah no more, Poland weighs its options. Talked about that meeting last week between Merkel, Angela Merkel's visit to Warsaw, how it's the most important meeting of the German and Polish leaders since 1989. This article says here, both Brexit and the election of Donald Trump have set in motion discussions in Europe and beyond which may quickly change the EU in a more profound way than all previous setbacks to integration. I mean, this could change the EU. The EU, by the way, is about to have its own relaunch. My father had a program just over the weekend. I'll play a clip here in just a second. Talking about that the greatest personal prophecy of Herbert Armstrong. Europe's about to be relaunched. And what comes from that will be 10 nations or kings. 10 kings that come together with one mind, as Revelation 17 says. Well, going back to this piece in the European Council on Foreign Relations, it talks about how Donald Trump is seen as the incarnation of the worst German stereotypes about the United States. It says here, the new softer tone towards Germany and attempts at rapprochement with Berlin are linked to the relative alienation of Poland in the EU. Its key partner, the United Kingdom, has decided to leave the EU. The Visegrad Group is too disparate and too weak to rely on, and the U.S. has become highly unpredictable. It's just basically saying Poland's out of options. It has to trust in Germany. Warsaw must therefore decide if it wants to use the possible flexibilization of EU integration as an opportunity to engage with Germany and other key partners or to stand apart. And so they're being drawn in. They're being drawn in. And here Poland of all nations, it's overcoming its long-standing suspicion of Germany. And in order to receive protection, it thinks, from Russia. Well, there's quite a few stories coming out this week, too, about the situation in Greece, where history is recent, very recent history, is repeating itself. Greece facing a debt repayment in July, I think it is, some 86 billion euro. And it needs to be bailed out. Either the EU needs to bail it out or the International Monetary Fund. And, of course, Germany is on hand to demand that Greece make more severe budget cuts. And then the IMF and others suggesting that they're going to be unable to do that. And that Greece may have to leave the Eurozone. This from Carnegie Europe. It says here, if Europe wishes to survive as a global player, it should stand on its own by developing a security policy based on higher defense spending and an active international presence. This, however, is conditioned by a strong European economy, which is currently far from guaranteed. I mean, Europe needs to step up and have its own security policy. It needs its own nuclear umbrella. But we've got to make sure things are in shape financially or economically first. The Grexit. Here we are again talking about the Greece exit from the Union. It says the Grexit option appears increasingly attractive in conservative European circles. Patience for Greece is gradually being exhausted, while the idea is gaining ground that a more restricted monetary union freed from its weakest members. That's the idea that's gaining ground. Maybe we can lop off a few of the weaker ones and have a stronger, more durable European Union that can then focus on the security policy. That's what the continent needs. It needs a European Union that's been relaunched. And that's what's coming. We know this because of Bible prophecy. As I said, my father touched on this over the weekend with his program, Herbert Armstrong's Greatest Personal Prophecy. Here's a snippet from that show, clip four.
For decades, Europe had been trying to unite into some kind of a strong military and political force, but it simply wasn't able to do it. Now today, Europe is still attempting to do that. They have some 28 nations that are loosely allied, but it's really a lot of confusion in many ways, and I think a rather spectacular failure in many ways.
That's a snippet from my father's program over the weekend. 28 nations, and of course one of its biggest, one of its most economically prosperous members is on the way out. And is that the beginning of several others that are going to follow right after Britain? Here they are, just loosely allied. And as he said, it's a lot of confusion in so many ways. And in some ways, of course, it's fulfillment of Daniel 2, that mixture of iron and clay. I mean, even when it comes down to the 10, there still is going to be this unsteady mixture. But we know it's going to be downsized. Daniel 2 and Revelation 17 brings this out. And so what will happen to bring it down to the 10? Again, this was the subject of my father's program over the weekend. Notice clip 5 here.
Mr. Armstrong saw that it's going to take something, some kind of an emergency, some kind of a crisis to really bring these nations together.
That was Herbert Armstrong's greatest personal prophecy my father was referring to there. He saw that it was going to take some kind of an emergency, a crisis, to bring it all together in fulfillment of so many Bible prophecies. That crisis, as Herbert Armstrong often said, would most likely be an economic crisis. And so all of these crises converging at once. You have the problem with some of the poorer states like Greece. And then you have the security threats coming from Russia. You have Britain on the way out. You have Donald Trump threatening to withdraw from NATO, or at least to not carry all of the weight anymore. It's all building to what Jesus prophesied in Matthew 24 and Luke 21. Mark 13, as that article on Friday brought out with respect to Russia and China. I mean, you take all of this together, and what we're seeing is a picture of a world primed for conflict. That's the picture that's emerging from all these stories, from all these prophecies. It was interesting while I was away over the weekend with my wife, enjoying some time with her on our 20th anniversary. While we were eating, we noticed one older woman who had eaten by herself a time or two down at the hotel restaurant. And so we actually talked about it on the way to this particular meal, saying that if she was alone again, that we should try to scoot over next to her and have a chat with her. And she, as it happens, we saw her. She was alone, and we motioned for her to come over, and she was nice enough to do that. And she sat right in the small table next to us. And she's an older woman from Manchester. She's been single for most of her adult life. And now she's an elderly woman getting away to a warmer location for several weeks each winter. And so we talked a bit about the many changes that she's seen in Britain and in Europe over the course of her long life. I asked about Brexit, since she's from Britain, and she said she was very much for it. And I said, well, why were you supportive of Brexit? She says, well, I don't want to be dictated to. She knows Europe was controlling Britain in so many ways, that the ultimate control was coming from Brussels. And so we went from that then to talking about the future of the European Union and the one dominant nation there that she can clearly see. She said that for 40 years, this was her words, for 40 years, Germany's been using the European Union to build the empire that it failed to build during World War II. The empire it failed to build by force. And now, as she said, they're doing it with stealth. Pretty amazing. She wasn't a religious woman by any means, but she can see what's happening to some extent. And as with most, of course, they're only willing to go so far in their thinking, those that maybe see more than some others do. Because as bad as the world is today, and she basically said that it's pretty bad, it's a lot worse than when she was young. She said, as bad as it is today, well, it's certainly not going to get so bad that nuclear bombs start exploding. And she added that, well, if the world ever did fall apart like that, that she wouldn't be living at the time to see it anyway. So what does it matter? Now it turns out she didn't have any children, and maybe her thinking would be a little bit different if she had grown children who had their own children. If she was thinking about her own children and grandchildren, maybe she'd be a little more concerned about what might happen after she dies physically. But I just want to go back to that reasoning. Really seeing a lot of the problems in this world and seeing that Germany's building an empire in Europe. And knowing, I'm not sure how old she was or how far removed she was from World War II, but just by the looks of her, she probably was born around that time. In any event, as much as she sees, she's like so many others in the world today that get on their soapbox talking about how bad the problems are, but then go on to say, or at least to imply, that, well, it's never going to get so bad that we come into a period of world war again. That's over. I mean, that's in the past. That's never going to happen again. Nothing like World War II. Nothing like World War I. And yet, what did Jesus say? What did Christ himself prophesy? Let me just take you through Mark chapter 13. This is the Olivet prophecy I mentioned earlier. Mark 13 and verse 19, it says, "For in those days shall be affliction, such as was not from the beginning of the creation, which God created unto this time." It's never been like this. Nothing can compare to it. Jesus said, "And except that the Lord had shortened those days, no flesh should be saved. But for the elect's sake, whom he has chosen, he has shortened the days." And so, Jesus Christ, Christ himself, said that except God, by his supernatural power, unless God intervenes, unless God steps in and shortens these days, there'd be no flesh left. There'd be no flesh saved alive. And so we know then, we know from the prophecies of God that world war is not over. That's something Herbert Armstrong said quite often, and he wrote about it as well. I'll read an excerpt from his autobiography in just a bit. But first, let me play a couple of clips from his old radio broadcast. This is Herbert Armstrong from many decades ago, clip one.
"Then the wars, and we've had wars and wars and wars up till now. But the biggest war is yet to come. It was finally to climax in World War, and we're in a recess right now. Now, mark you what I said. I said we're in a recess between World War II and World War III. And World War III is just around the corner. And let me tell you that the weapons now exist for the first time in history when man can destroy mankind, when all human life can be erased from this planet, when we can be blasted out of existence. And the greatest problem in the world today, our number one problem, is that of human survival."
That's from a message Herbert Armstrong gave many years ago. And I tried to convey some of that in as tactful a way as possible when speaking with this woman over the weekend, this woman from Manchester, saying that, you know, well, if you're wrong, and if there ever is another world war, all it takes is one madman to pull the trigger. And once nuclear bombs are flying, there's no going back. There's no going back. What if this isn't the end of World War? World War II, I mean. What if that wasn't the end? What if, as Mr. Armstrong said there, it's just a recess between World War II and World War III? Notice again what he had to say on one of his old programs. This is clip two.
"He prophesied a time of world wars. Then he said there would be famines and disease epidemics in different places and earthquakes. Now, we've only had a foretaste of that. The world war is getting progressively worse. We're only in a recess now between World War II and World War III. Everybody knows World War III is coming. Bible prophecy says World War III is coming. And when it comes, according to the biblical prophecies, it'll come with a terrific famine."
He said, notice there a little earlier, everybody knows World War III is coming. And I don't think, if he were around today, I don't think he'd say that today. I think coming out of World War II, there were a lot of people concerned about, what do we have to do to prevent Germany, this German military machine, what do we have to do to prevent that from reemerging as a threat to world peace? And then early on in those years of the Cold War, you had the proliferation of all of these nuclear weapons, these atomic bombs and nuclear weapons later, in the United States, in Russia, or the Soviet Union. And now they've spread right around the earth. There's 16,000 of those bombs. Some 10 nations that control nuclear weapons, that have nuclear weapons at their disposal. If this is only a recess, like I've said so many times before, I mean, once you have a world war that starts with those bombs, that starts with those kinds of weapons, the last world war, they ended with that. Well, you begin to get an idea of what Jesus was talking about. Okay, so the recess is a little bit longer than some thought, including Mr. Armstrong, including even us, early on when the Philadelphia church started in 1990. I don't think there were too many that thought it would just continue on until 2017. But here we are, it's 2017. And now you see so many dramatic things happening, just in the last year even. The beast is emerging. The Prince of Raj is on the scene. What was it that Jeremiah said on Friday in his article? A picture is emerging. It all paints a picture of a world primed for conflict. Primed for conflict. In the Ezekiel, the End Time Prophet booklet. And also, I mentioned Russia and China in prophecy earlier. There's a lot in there. That last chapter of the Russia and China in Prophecy booklet, and I forget which chapter in the Ezekiel booklet, it's maybe the third or fourth or fifth one, but there's just an excellent overview of Bible prophecy. I'm going to take you through a few verses here in Revelation 9. This passage here, I touched on it in the program, the video that we taped last Tuesday. This is a show that will go to air this coming weekend. I'll have figures for the repeat that we ran this past weekend, perhaps on tomorrow's program. But here in Revelation 9 and verse 1, we're at the time of the day of the Lord. This is that last year of that 3.5-year period. First, the great tribulation that Jesus spoke of, the time of Jacob's trouble, those first 2.5 years, and then God begins to intervene. Revelation 9 and verse 1 says, "And the fifth angel sounded, and I saw a star fall from heaven unto earth, and to him was given the key of the bottomless pit." Here we are, right in the midst of worldwide conflagration. And you can read about a clash bigger than the Daniel 11:40 clash. The tidings out of the east, troubling that beast power. In any event, you can read about the next, what is it, verses 1 through 11, I think. This first woe, the beast power's preemptive strike against the kings of Asia. By this time, I mean Israel, the latter-day descendants of ancient Israel, they're no longer on the scene. They've been conquered during that period of Jacob's trouble. They've been carted off into captivity. It says in verse 5 here of Revelation 9, "And to them was given that they should not kill them, but that they should be tormented 5 months. And their torment was as the torment of a scorpion when he strikes a man for 5 months." The beast power, the European beast power, torments mankind. And you can read about how horrific it is in the next verse, where it says men will seek death. And then read verses 7 through 10. John was writing this vision. He was recording it in the best language or imagery that he could understand for the first century, about these locusts and these scorpions that had these stings in their tails, and their power was to hurt men for 5 months. He saw modern warfare, and he described it in the best way that he could. Verse 11 says, "And they had a king over them, which is the angel of the bottomless pit, whose name in the Hebrew tongue is Abaddon. But in the Greek tongue, has his name Apollyon. These are both words, representing Satan the devil. Verse 12 says, one woe is past, and behold, there come two woes more hereafter. And the sixth angel sounded, and I heard from the four horns of the golden altar, which is before God, saying to the sixth angel, which had the trumpet, loose the four angels, which are bound in the great river Euphrates. Herbert Armstrong said in his book, The Book of Revelation Unveiled at Last, he said, he's talking about this prophecy, this refers to a tremendous military power, also to the north, due north. World events are now moving rapidly to make possible the creation of a communist Eurasian army of that unbelievable manpower. He said, yes, it's time to wake up to what's taking place today, the true significance of the time in which we live and where it's leading. World war is coming. We're just in a recess right now. And we should be concerned about the future of our children, our grandchildren. It talks about the 200 million man army in these next couple of verses. Where would that come from? There's only one place on earth it could come from. And that's the densely populated nations of Asia. This great Asian conglomerate. That taken together, you put China in there together with Japan and Russia. Russia doesn't have a lot of people, but there's lots of firepower. Put them together with China, though, and Japan and India. And you have multiple billions of people. And what could those nations produce, especially at a time of crisis, if they needed to, in terms of an army, a 200 million man army? It's not only possible, it's coming. God calls this army his army in Joel 2 because he's going to use that army as an instrument to correct the beast power. He says over in, where is it? Isaiah, well, I just read it a few days ago. But God says basically to this Asian army, you do to that beast power what they did to other people, to other nations. And then, of course, not to be left out, God has to deal with this Asian power as well as he humbles all of mankind, as he prepares this earth for the return of his Son, as King of Kings and Lord of Lords. Verse 17 of Revelation 9 says, and thus I saw the horses in the vision, and them that sat on them, having breastplates of fire and of jacinth and brimstone, and the heads of the horses were as the heads of lions, and out of the mouths issued fire and smoke and brimstone. It says, by these three was the third part of men killed, by the fire and by the smoke and by the brimstone, which issued out of their mouths. It says, for their power is in their mouth and in their tails, for their tails were like unto serpents, and had heads, and with them they do hurt. Some powerful imagery here. People just brush it aside and say, well, it's just imagery, that's it. It couldn't happen. Nothing like this could ever happen to this earth. Surely man wouldn't do this to himself. Or maybe they look at this and say, well, I just can't understand it. It seems like mythology or something. But the thing is, you can know the countries involved, you can know the time period that's being discussed here. You put it together with a number of other prophecies, and it all becomes powerfully clear. It becomes powerfully clear. I mean, just consider the headlines, some of the stories that we've been reading. Consider these developments taken together. They paint a picture of a world prime for conflict. World war is not over. We're just in the recess. In between the second round and the third round. It says in verse 20, and the rest of the men which were not killed by these plagues yet repented not of the works of their hands, that they should not worship demons and idols of gold and silver, brass and stone and wood, which neither can see nor hear nor walk. Neither repented they of their murders, nor of their sorceries, nor of their fornication, nor of their thefts. All of this destruction and bloodshed, all of this violence and suffering. And yet still, even after most of Earth's population has been personally afflicted by nuclear war, you still see that same hard-headed stubbornness, a mankind that just refuses to repent. You see why God has to take it to this level. This is what it takes to get mankind to bow down to God. This is what it takes to bring mankind to his knees. That excerpt in the autobiography, you can find this on page 790 of the version that we printed last year. It's talking about Herbert Armstrong's first public speaking campaign overseas. He had a lot of public Bible lectures in the Willamette Valley in Oregon and, of course, all along the West Coast in particular. But he spoke in other areas too, in Texas and in Iowa. But in 1954, for the first time, he was speaking to a general audience outside of the United States. This meeting took place in Belfast, right here in the UK, Northern Ireland. And they contacted their Plain Truth subscribers. They put in a small advertisement in a local paper. And an audience of about 750 turned out to listen to Mr. Armstrong talk about what's prophesied for Britain. What's coming upon Britain? Where are we in prophecy? It was a serious message, a sobering message. And keep in mind, this is in 1954. And the week before he gave this speech, he spent 5 days in Germany. Just 9 years removed from the end of World War II. And as he explained in his autobiography, he saw in Germany a nation that had been just about shattered from the war just 8 or 9 years previous. He said he saw emphatic evidence that world war is not yet over. Do you see that evidence? He saw it in 1954. He saw evidence that world war is not over. He told that audience in Belfast that we're just in the second recess of world war. You had World War I, then a recess. You had World War II, then a recess. And then comes World War III. And all of these nations involved in that conflict equipped with nuclear bombs. Mr. Armstrong said there, what's prophesied for Britain? What's prophesied for the United States? He said to that 750, those people gathered in Belfast, I've crossed America and the Atlantic Ocean to tell you things I can't say on the radio. What I'm now going to say is not popular, but it is as certain as the rising and setting of tomorrow's sun. Yet, on beyond it all, after our peoples have been punished as no nations ever were before, world peace is coming in our time. He said the reaction was really positive to that public speaking campaign, that lecture in Belfast. People wanted to know what the Bible had to say. There were more people back then than there are today who knew World War III was coming. Today, we're so far removed from World War II, and we've had so many years of prosperity and relative peace, and we're so steeped in the very sophisticated ways of this world that we think there's no... It's bad! Okay, I'll give you that. It's bad, but there's no way it's ever going to get that bad. There's no way it's ever going to get like what Jesus described in the Olivet Prophecy. A lot of people think that way. But they need to open their eyes. They need to open their eyes and wake up to the fact that this world is primed for conflict. That we're just in the midst of a brief recess between world war. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show.
We have already had World War I and World War II. We're in a recess between that and World War III right now. That's where we are.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Are we living in the last days? Some dismiss the notion as fanatical, but world leaders and news analysts are issuing warnings that are becoming more and more dire. Could Bible prophecies about the last days actually be accurate? Our brochure can help guide you through the relevant news and history and help you compare these events to what the Bible says. Are we living in the last days? This brochure is available for free right now at thetrumpet.com. The Trumpet Daily Radio Show airs every morning at 7 a.m. Central Time on KPCG 101.3 FM in Edmond, Oklahoma.
Just a couple of more articles here that I thought were interesting and that we could comment on here briefly. This first one here about the test that Angela Merkel is facing, as the Telegraph writes here, the toughest battle of her career. You may have seen some headlines in recent weeks about Martin Schulz, who is emerging as her main challenger, at least at this point, coming from the liberal wing. And then as the Telegraph brings out, of course, and we've talked more about this in recent weeks, about the threat coming from the far right, the anti-immigration parties in Germany, and the strong showings that they've had in regional elections. This article says here, it's from the Telegraph yesterday, says as Melanie Amann, a political correspondent for Der Spiegel magazine, has it, Merkel's facing the toughest challenge of her career. She has lost this aura of being invincible. She's lost it. She's lost the aura. And so what's happening? Is Germany in the midst of some fast-moving, dramatic changes, just like what we've seen in Britain, just like what we've seen in the United States? She also looks increasingly isolated abroad, it says. Where once she bestrode Europe, imposing her demands for austerity on countries with wobbly economies, she's now battling against the tide. It talks about how some of her friends, her counterparts, are now gone. Barack Obama, David Cameron, and such. And now she's dealing with Donald Trump and the emergence of other populist leaders like Marine Le Pen, Geert Wilders in the Netherlands. It says here, with unprecedented challenges piling up at home and internationally, Germany's Iron Lady risks losing her medal. It says, traveling through Germany last month, the Telegraph met few who expect their leader to be toppled. Well, there's still many in Germany that think she'll somehow weather the storm. But it goes on and talks about how the refugee crisis touched off this period where she now has lost that aura of invincibility. And she's faced a lot of criticism from her own party, in particular, I guess, from the sister party. And then switching over to the New York Times, this is on the same subject. It says here, squeezed by far right and also the rising left. Suddenly, Germany's left has unexpectedly resurged, prompting Der Spiegel magazine this week to pose a question on its cover, will she fall? Will she fall? I mean, we don't know the answer, it goes on to say. But all of these crises, Brexit, the election of Mr. Trump, these things have profoundly shaken Germany. The New York Times says later, once it would have been rare for German politicians to lecture other democracies on values, especially the United States, but Germany is now regarded as a critical pillar in upholding the liberal Western order, which is one reason the September 24 national elections are being watched so closely. Everyone's going to be watching what happens in September in Germany, and of course we'll be following it closely over the next several months. This piece here, an interesting take. I think this is from the Vancouver Sun. I failed to write down the publication, but it's by it's a column by Andrew Coyne. He says, collective resistance is the only way to contain the Trump threat. Everyone's got to, and there's some things about this article that are almost silly. But going back to the oncoming trade war, Brad McDonald talked about this on Thursday's program. You look at what the Bible prophesies about how the United States and Britain are brought down first. The siege, the economic siege. And there is going to be a sort of collective resistance. Not against just Trump, but the United States and Britain. It says here, for 40-odd years after World War II, the policy of the free world towards the Soviet Union was one of containment, a strategy of collective resistance rather than, on the one hand, appeasement, or, on the other hand, open conflict. We now face the sad reality that for the next 4 years at least, some version of containment will have to be our policy toward the United States. It's strange reading this from someone writing in Canada, of all places. But to just take his point and to apply it to Germany and the trade alliances, the latest article up at the trumpet.com right now, where's Mexico going to turn? What about South America? What about the forming alliances in Asia? Now that the United States has pulled out of that organization or that trade agreement, you can look for Germany and a powerful European Union bloc to reach out to China and Russia and others in opposition to the United States, in strong opposition to Great Britain. That's what's prophesied. One final piece here. This is from the New York Post. I just thought this was interesting given the fact that we've had an Antiochus type in the White House and now a Jeroboam type. And this piece at the Post says how President Obama or former President Obama is scheming to sabotage Trump's presidency. And it talks about this group that I guess the president or his administration started when he was seeking re-election back in 2012. Well, let me just read the opening. It says, when former President Barack Obama said he was heartened by anti-Trump protests, he was sending a message of approval to his troops. Troops? Yes, Obama has an army of agitators numbering more than 30,000 who will fight his Republican successor at every turn on his historic presidency. It says, and Obama will command them from a bunker less than 2 miles from the White House. That's how far he lives from the White House. And as this article brings out, I mean, when have you seen this? This is shaping up to be a highly unusual post-presidency, it says. Here he's just down the road from the White House. And he's there to oppose Donald Trump's America First agenda. And it's just leading to greater division and strife within the United States, which works together with the economic siege brought on from foreign forces to bring down the United States. 13 months. Those first 13 months of the tribulation. The siege. Ezekiel 4, Ezekiel 5. Study it. Get the Ezekiel, the end time prophet booklet. This article says he's doing it through a network of leftist nonprofits like the Organizing for Action. Normally, you'd expect an organization set up to support a politician and his agenda to close up shop after the candidate leaves office, but not Obama's Organizing for Action. I mean, that organization is still going strong. 30,000 members. And he's going to be giving it the marching orders, as this article brings out. Is this going to solve the problems of the United States or just make matters that much worse? It says, finally, President Obama will be overseeing it all from a shadow White House located within 2 miles of Trump. It features a mansion. Well, it talks about all the offices. He'll be in there. It says he's 55 and he's ready to carry on. He's not content to go quietly into the night like other ex-presidents. It quotes him here at the end. You're going to see me early next year, he said after the election, and we're going to be in a position where we can start cooking up all kinds of great stuff. That's a quote from President Obama as he was leaving office. Well, that's all that we have time for today. It's good to be back with you here at the start of another week. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send those comments to td@kpcg.fm. Thank you for joining us today, and we'll see you again tomorrow.